Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, May 28th, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I hope everyone who had an extended holiday weekend over the weekend enjoyed it. And with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, I'm a little worse for wear, but I did enjoy it.
I did not enjoy it, and I too am worse for wear. I'm very stiff and sore from a bunch of home improvement projects over the weekend, so it was rough. Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Fully rested John is here.
All right. That's what we like to hear, because we have a lot to talk about today. So first and foremost, let's talk a little bit about this interview, Andrew, that you wrote up, where The Independent sat down with Craig Federighi and talked about a wide variety of Apple-related topics.
Yeah, probably the two biggest things that I got out of it were Craig was responding to Sundar Pichai's editorial a little bit. They said he gave the impression that he was, like, surprised by it. Uh-huh. So Sundar insinuated, he didn't directly mention Apple, but he said privacy shouldn't be a luxury good, and obviously everyone thinks of Apple. Mm-hmm. And so Craig just said, I don't buy into the luxury good dig, he says. On the one hand, it's gratifying that other companies are talking more and more about privacy. But Apple, he says, Apple seeks to set a good example for the world to show what's possible, mm-hmm. and to raise people's expectations, what they should expect of products. And he says, yeah, like, we do love selling Apple products to everyone, but he still doesn't think that's a luxury.
Yeah. And I would agree with him. And, you know, I mean, we've said here forever, as soon as Apple started talking about privacy stuff, which I think might date back to the advent of iMessage, even, which is well before the first time I remember a lot of discussion about it, which was around Apple Pay and how they were, and because that came with Touch ID, which is how all of your data gets secured these days, is the secure enclave setup that's part of the hardware of iOS devices. And That was the thing that I thought was notable in this was, let's talk about a little bit about privacy and what people can expect us to do with their data.
Mm-hmm. I think what's notable is that everybody was trying to get away with murder until until things went wonky with Cambridge Analytica and Facebook and government scrutiny and renewed interest in regulation and talk about breaking up the tech giants. And all of a sudden, those companies that were getting away with murder before are all on the privacy bandwagon, mm-hmm. and saying, well, Apple's, we're worried about privacy too, but Apple's just charging extra for it and they don't need to. So I think it's kind of interesting.
Well, go ahead, Andrew.
Well, I was just going to point out something that Brian said a while ago, responding to Sundar. It's precisely because of companies that, like Google and Facebook, that we see privacy as a luxury.
Uh-huh. It is. And I think the other piece of it is it's a little, please pardon the phrase, apples to oranges to compare them, because there was never anything in Apple's business model that required there to be customer data, just customers. Apple doesn't care where I use Apple Pay. Apple doesn't care how much it is. Apple doesn't care what kind of record there is of those transactions. It doesn't matter to them. It matters to them that I bought a phone that uses Apple Pay. That's the part they care, mm-hmm. about.
This goes back a long ways. It goes back farther, mm-hmm. than we think. It goes back to the early days of Steve Jobs, about when he came back to Apple and building products like the first iMac that, mm-hmm. feel right and look right and bring joy to the customer. This feeling of confidence and joy in your product is something that's not new to Apple. It's been around a long time, and Tim Cook is simply living in carrying forth the legacy of Steve Jobs' approach to customer.
Right, but also, like, the business model was never mining customer data to do something with it. That's never been anything Apple's been particularly interested in. Like, that was never their business model.
It was harder to do in the early days, and when it became easy to do, Apple just said no.
Yeah, Apple was already making money other ways.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. And thankfully, never pursued that particular avenue. So perhaps we have the spectacular failure of some of Apple's attempts at social networking, let's put air quotes around that, to hold responsible. I'm not sure. I guess it depends on your point of view. But Ping's amazing failure, I think, kept Apple out of that business forever, which I can't say I'm sad about. Ping wasn't great. I did sort of like it, but I never got the feeling that it was anything that mattered to most people at Apple either, which is sort of why it got Old Yellered at one point, and nobody really missed it until it was pointed out, you know, later. So I did think it was interesting that Craig ended up addressing this and talking about it.
There's a glorious picture of the testing facility at the beginning of the article with the racks of testing equipment.
Yeah, so that's the other part I thought was interesting.
Yeah,
I wish they had tested the keyboards on the MacBooks this just as rigorously.
Don't we all? I mean, really. Like, I'm not being sad about that. Like, I really do.
I mean, can you imagine having a robot, you know, doing a million key presses? I don't know if they ever did that. I doubt it somehow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, honestly, like, to me, the disappointment and, like, the thing that disappoints me about this article is that it's not 100% about the testing facility, because I'm really curious about that. I want to know more. And how are they doing this? And lots more information about what the testing is and that kind of stuff. Like, that seems
Well, it was a vague,
like, a lot of fun.
It was a vague reference to hacking techniques where you might freeze the chip or do something mechanical to the chip in order to make it spill its guts.
Because one of the things they mentioned was that these chips, like the secure enclave, go through this rigorous stress testing, some of which involves like freezing them to minus 40 Celsius and up to 110 Celsius.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it might be because I remember there was this hack, which I linked to in my link teaser, where these people created this tool that extracted information from a device's RAM by freezing it, which, like, RAM is supposed to be volatile, although it does still keep data for a certain amount of time.
Yes.
And by freezing it, you can kind of delay that and make it easier to extract that information.
Mm-hmm. So it's also a trick Apple you can use to recover data. In the olden days, like, if you had a mini with a flaky hard drive, you could put your mini in the freezer for a couple of hours, and then maybe you could scrape the data off of it before it heated up too much and, you know, went flaky again.
Yeah.
By the way, minus 40 Celsius is interesting because it's the same as minus 40 Fahrenheit.
I know.
Two scales meet at that temperature.
Yeah. And 100 degrees Celsius is 212 Fahrenheit, where water boils.
Now, that's not as interesting because 212 is an awkward number, but...
Well, yeah. But water boils at 100 degrees Celsius, and this is hotter than that.
That was by design. Yeah.
Those are the two marks I know, 40 below and 100 above Celsius. That's it.
I still see people on TV using the word centigrade. I think that went away 50 years ago.
Well, clearly it didn't, or you wouldn't still see it on TV.
Maybe they're from around 50 years ago.
See? That could be valid. But yeah, like, I know they say in the article that this is a top secret testing facility, but I would still like one of Apple's product videos about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't need to know the ins and outs of all the stuff they're doing, but just show me, like, they push the home button 11 jillion times before it goes out the door, right? Or they test the secure enclave in all these different ways. They put it through extreme heat, extreme cold. They drop them a bunch to see how long it takes before the screen cracks from all these different angles or whatever. And that stuff to me is really interesting. And of course, when Apple makes the video... The video is always interesting. Like, we've seen those. I mean, every time we have an event, when they show us a new video, I always say, I want the Apple TV channel that just shows those all the time. That would be awesome. And I would like to see more of that. And yeah, the chips was the thing you talked about.
Well, they can't give away too many secrets. They have to be careful.
Oh, I know.
The only stress testing I remember seeing in a video was them like taking an iPhone and having the machine like flex and twist it slightly just to test the flexibility of it, of the iPhone.
Yeah. Which also is interesting. I wonder how long ago that started. I did like that. Was there anything else interesting, Andrew, that Craig Federighi said in the article?
Not much. They mostly just talked about privacy with him. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's most of the article, just about privacy. A lot of stuff we've heard from Apple before. Another interesting part was they talked a little bit about Apple's fitness labs, where, you know, how they anonymize employee data and their volunteers' data with these specific things. Like, if you sign in to the building with a card, that's only used to sign in, that, like, they don't know who you are. The employees don't know, like, where their data will eventually be used in. So it's really fascinating. Like, Apple isn't just private on the public side, it's also in their private side.
Which is interesting, because that's data that would tend to be something that would be more closely watched. You know, once you're in and out of a building, like where you are and all that kind of stuff, that's pretty common in a lot of places. So it's nice to see that Apple's walking the walk, like internally as well. That's pretty great. So I thought that was interesting. So the other new thing today, believe it or not, it seems a little early for Throwback Thursday, but Apple's kind of clearing the decks before next week. Because we are less than a week away from the kickoff of WWDC 2019, the Worldwide Developer Conference Apple holds in San Jose. Monday morning is when Tim Cook will give the keynote address. And it's basically a public event. You can stream it on your Apple TV, on the website, et cetera, et cetera. You can find out more about... This is generally the public preview that they give the world of what's coming in the next version of iOS and what's coming in the next version of macOS. And we will hear a bunch about new features. We will hear more about Marzipan, hopefully, this year. And as far as the macOS side, which is going to make iOS apps easier to use on macOS. And the... And we did get new MacBook Pros last week, and this week we got new iPods. Like I said, Throwback Thursday. We have new iPods. Andrew, you want to take us through these?
Yeah, so there's really not much to say. The only things that changed is they have a new processor, the A10 chip. I'm pretty sure that's the chip used in the iPhone 7 and 7 Plus. I think it comes in a new pink color. And there's an additional storage option. So it starts at... there are 32 gigs, 128 gigs, and the new one is 256. And they're basically marketing this as, now you can do group FaceTime and play with AR apps with this.
Okay. Yeah, I did see there was a lot of time spent in the press release on the... arcade version, like the arcade angle with this, right? That they were gonna that it was gonna be really great to play with, because it was gonna have all of the AR and all of that happening with it, which I thought was sort of interesting. I'm curious what market they think they're serving with it, because it doesn't seem like... I mean, generally the iPod... Like I was saying earlier, I measured the one that I have sitting here on my desk, because I have a few sitting on my desk. And it's basically the same size as it was before, with the same resolution as it was before, which we determined was iPhone 5S size resolution, which is really a throwback, particularly if you have an iPhone 10 or you have a 10S Max like John does. if John were to pick up a current iteration of an iPod, or even the previous iteration of the iPod, I don't know if you'd know what to do with it.
It's kind of small. To answer your question, Kelly, Renee Ritchie answered that question on Friday, or maybe it was Thursday last week. People who are curious about the Apple ecosystem, but not too committed and not ready to commit to a phone and a plan.
Mm-hmm.
Two, kids who didn't need a phone or whose parents don't want them to have a phone, but want them to have a device that they can use for tracking.
Yeah.
A cheap music player, a gaming device, or an inexpensive way for developers to have an extra device for testing.
Well, those are the two markets I know of personally are test device, so that you are not installing the 0-day release of the iOS beta on your daily driver. I know loads of people who use iPods for that because they're relatively inexpensive, $200 versus whatever, plus a data plan, you know,
for
some sort.
32 gigabytes. I think it's outrageous that they're charging an extra $100 to go to 128.
Yeah. It is.
It's outrageous.
I'm with you 100% on that. I will never understand Apple's storage pricing, but developers are the one that I know the most. And then the second most common is not quite iPhone ready in whatever way that means.
Before like, the show, we figured out that it's basically a 5 or 5S with a 4-inch display without the phone modem.
But much thinner, yes.
A little thinner, 0.24 instead of 0.3 mm-hmm. inches.
Yeah.
Convert to millimeters, please.
7.1 millimeters.
36 by 640 resolution, which is remarkably low for these days, but it's still retina, still 326 PPI.
Yeah. So it is, I will say, again, like it's the previous iteration, but it's got the same screen. And the screen looks great. It's a really nice looking screen. They are very solid devices. They're something that we always used with AppCamp for Girls. We deploy them out for a week to middle school students, and we've yet to get one back in all the years we've been. We did this. We've yet to get any back that were cracked or damaged or even like scratched up. Like they've been remarkable devices, and I can't say enough nice things about them. If they fit into the slot that you need that sort of technology for. So
I'm curious about Apple's thinking about this device though, because it has Touch ID.
Mm-hmm.
And one would have hypothesized a year ago that Apple would upgrade the device with Face ID, and Apple has gotten into this mode where they're releasing older products with upgraded CPUs,
mm-hmm.
but keeping the price down by using older technology.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a curious thing that I'm not quite sure what to make of it.
That it doesn't have Face ID?
Yeah, I mean, you think you do across-the-board upgrades with the latest technology of your products, and use economies of scale to keep the price under control. But Apple seems to decide, well, we're not going to put this in there, and we're not going to put that in there, and we're going to keep Touch ID, and we'll keep the cost down, and we'll charge them a lot of money for the memory.
Now, here's the thing, though. Is there Touch ID on the iPod?
I don't
because
think
the previous model doesn't have it. I know, I'm staring at it, and I never got, and it never hassles me to set it up.
Which iPod are you referring to?
Both of them.
And the new... In the new iPod, in the product images, the home button is the
There's
old
no
one.
Ring. Yeah. No. So
the new iPod Touch has a Touch ID. Has Touch ID.
It does?
It does.
Okay. I didn't see it, so that's why I wondered.
Yeah. I'm looking at the product page.
Oh.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not saying I don't believe you, but like, yeah, looking at the product, at the image, the button doesn't look Touch ID-able. There's no little silver ring around it.
Yeah. Oh. Oh.
So, when I look at them, it looks odd. 4-inch retina display, Apple Arcade.
I just assumed that because it had a button there that it was Touch ID, but maybe it's not even Touch ID-enabled, like the old iPod.
They're not. Like you said, yeah, it doesn't look any different outside. It doesn't look any different than the previous. Button. Yeah. Straight up home button. There's no Touch ID.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
Yep.
Now I'm even more disillusioned.
All right. Andrew, if we're really quiet, we can hear the security alerts go off in John's head. And I look forward, John, to your eventual editorial about the security level of this new device.
It's definitely weird.
Yes.
Is a passcode not good enough for you?
4-digit passcode.
Because it would cost $200 more if they added Touch ID, right? Because security is a luxury.
Sure, because they've only sold 100 million devices with a Touch ID sensor. And so it would be so expensive to put one in the new iPod Touch.
Yeah. That's exactly the kind of thing that I always said was a smart move that Apple would make, because they've sort of done all that research and paid for all of it already. Because remember, this is the iPhone 5, which is 2013? Was that the iPhone 5 or 5S?
I think so, yeah.
That seems like far enough back.
September of 13.
Yeah.
iPhone 5.
For the 5. Okay.
Yeah.
So the 5 didn't have Touch ID. The 5S did. So 2014. So 5 years ago, they released this technology out into the world. So hopefully by now that technology has more than paid for itself. So they would basically get it for free to put into the iPod, and there's no Touch ID on the iPod Touch. So first of all, branding failure. Second of all, that's a security issue. I know that the current Intel this morning model doesn't ever ask, and you can set up a passcode, but it is completely optional. So that's interesting.
Well, maybe they figured the users would be mostly young kids, maybe between 5 and 14. And asking them to do the fingerprint registration would probably be a challenge for some young kids, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I would be very interested to get an answer from Apple on the lack of Touch ID in this. The other thing I will point out, though, is if the colors are the same, the website is not doing them justice. So if you are interested in one in a particular color, go look at it in a store, because at least in my estimation, those colors are really, really nice. And even the gold, which generally is not a color that I super enjoy, the gold looks really nice. The red and blue are both fantastic. The pink, I think, is a new color. I haven't seen it in person. If it's more recent, I don't remember what the pink looks like. And the black and the silver are nice. So if you get a chance, get your hands on one. If, by any chance, you are in the market for a new iPod Touch, we would like to hear from you. I would like to find out what you're using it for. If it's just like people used to do with their old iPod non-touch models, and you just sort of connect it and leave it in the glove compartment of your car, and that's where all your music comes from. Or if you do something else with it, if you are one of those people who's testing development software on it, or if you have a family member who's not quite ready for iPhone and you want to sort of give them a practice run with something like this, we want to hear about it. You can email us at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave a comment in the show notes. Andrew, thanks for coming by today to talk to us about all this stuff.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And John, thanks for coming by to talk to us about iPods and about the secret testing facility.
Oh, you're very welcome. It was nice to be here.
And I was only sort of kidding when I said I look forward to your editorial about the lack of security on the iPod Touch.
But it does have a 3.5 millimeter headphone jack, so there's that. Yay!
Hey! So, not courageous enough to eliminate it entirely, huh?
Right.
Okay. Just checking. All right. I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations podcast. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.